Hello, and welcome to Distant Echoes, episode 22, There Is No War in Santa Fe. Last time we talked about the years after the Pueblo Revolt. We talked about how, while the Spanish went from governor to governor and languished at El Paso, the Pueblo Alliance, whatever the form, began to fall apart, while old grievances and grudges among them led to war between the Pueblos. We left off in 1691, when Diego de Vargas had become governor and was planning his reconquest of New Mexico. It took some time to get going, and he did not set out until August 10, 1692. Officially, this was an armed reconnaissance mission. Spanish were careful to avoid harming the pueblos they traveled through, finding most of them abandoned. They planned an assault on Cochiti, which they had expected to be resistant to Spanish approaches. Instead, they had found the pueblo abandoned. On the morning of September 13, 1692, the Spanish would arrive at the fortress that had been built over the ruins of Santa Fe. They called out that they came in peace to pardon the pueblos. Initially, these calls were not believed, the pueblos thinking that it was a trick from a hostile tribe. After the sun rose, they called out to de Vargas that he should approach and remove his helmet. The governor obliged the request. Per John Kessel, in Pueblos, Spaniards in the Kingdom of New Mexico, they then asked if Francisco Javier, Luis de Quintana, and Diego López Zambrano were among them, which de Vargas denied and said that they would never return. While de Vargas was talking with the pueblos, he had his men set up at strategic positions around Santa Fe. Others from nearby pueblos also came to watch. One thing that had helped ease tensions among the pueblos was that the Spanish had not brought women and children, which may have signaled to the pueblos that the Spanish did not intend to stay. To the pueblos, the thought may have been that it might have just been easier to let the Spanish have their little ritual and then head home. On September 14th, Governor Don Diego de Vargas would enter Santa Fe in finery and ceremonially retook the city for the Spanish Empire. He cautioned his men to throw their hats in the air during the shout of Viva el Rey, but not to fire their weapons, to avoid a misunderstanding from those outside the walls. The next day, he met with Luis Tapatu, the current leader of the Pueblo Alliance. He and his companies accepted absolution, and some children were baptized. De Vargas took full advantage of this opportunity to make friends and influence people. Wherever he went in his tour of the Pueblos, he tried to recreate this scene. At Zuni, he would even find a well-kept Christian altar, in a world where Christianity had been mostly thrown to the side. The story behind it went, Juan Greyrobe, friars often wore blue robes in this period, had chosen to join the Zuni rather than be martyred. This friar had been the reason for the altar. There was indeed a Fray Juan de Bal at Zuni in 1680. In Mexico City, de Vargas portrayed the peaceful reconquest as a fait accompli, but he knew that this was a short-lived truce, not full coexistence. Everywhere he went, the pueblos wanted the Spanish to ally with them and punish their enemies, and divisions ran deep within the pueblos on if they should even allow the Spanish to return to the province. When he returned to Santa Fe, they converted a kiva on the outskirts of the fortress into a church. This would also give the Spanish a way into the capital should they need it. In October 1693, the remaining colonists at El Paso began the hard trek north. Due to delays, they would not arrive until December 1693. Along the way, 22 of the colonists' children would die. When they arrived at their makeshift camp outside the capital, the colonists were less than enthused. It was a cold winter. They tried to convince de Vargas to make the pueblos leave the capital and return to their pueblos. To some among the Spanish, there were concerns. It did not appear that the people occupying Santa Fe actually wanted to leave, and distrust still ran deep between Spanish and Pueblo leaders. Some spies were also reporting calls for war against the Spanish. Shortly after their arrival, the Spanish found the Pueblo of Santa Fe closed off. Offers of peace were quickly rejected. Overall, what reinforcements de Vargas could get were too far away and too small to really make a difference. Thanks to his initial foray into New Mexico being relatively peaceful, de Vargas had managed to win some local allies, such as Pecos Pueblo. On December 29, 1693, they would begin their assault on the Pueblo, which would last until December 30th. They would dig underneath the walls via the kiva they had converted to a church and to breach and take the city. 9 people would die during the assault and 2 had hanged themselves. 54 prisoners would be immediately sentenced to death, and an additional 16 would later be shot. The assault of Santa Fe, the final stage of the Pueblo Revolt, would begin. In a pattern that is becoming old by now, the Spanish needed food and the Pueblos would give it to them, by force if necessary. Rumors quickly spread around Santa Fe that the Pueblos were beginning to work together once again to oust the Spanish. Some Curacao Pueblos would throw their lot in with the Spanish and would send a warning that in 4 days, Jemez, Cochiti, and Quewa Pueblos had allied with the Navajo to attack the Spanish at Santa Fe. The Spanish plan was simple. Capture the principal planners. They could cut off the head of the snake, and the rest would hopefully disperse. Another group, composed of Tewas, Tanos, Jicaras, Taos, and some Apaches, was also preparing to overthrow the Spanish, although this may have been an attack targeting Pecos. De Vargas would dispatch 30 men to deal with this potential uprising, although it never came. This did reinforce his alliance with Pecos, though, by showing that the Spanish were a steadfast ally. He would suggest that the people of Santa Ana temporarily relocate among San Felipe or Zia, while he worked on investigating unrest among the Tewa. In 1694, he would assault San Ildefonso Pueblo. People would take refuge up on Black Mesa, and the Spanish would be unable to dislodge them. Later that year, in June, they set out to attack the Jemez Pueblos. Their leader at Pecos, Juan de Yi, would accompany the Spanish, and while they were at Taos, he would offer to meet with the leaders, thanks to the help of some Apache. This was the last the Spanish would ever see of Juan de Yi, and presumably he would be killed by those at Taos. In 1694, there were three main centers of resistance to Spanish rule. San Ildefonso, who were still taking refuge up at Black Mesa whenever the Spanish approached, La Cienguilla de Cochiti, where Cochiti and Kewa Pueblos were holding up, and Guadalupe Mesa, where the Jemez Pueblos were hiding from Spanish assaults. Guadalupe Mesa would fall first. San Ildefonso would fall after their crops were uprooted, and Cochiti would not resist for long alone. With this done, de Vargas again toured the Pueblos to install leaders and appoint missionaries. He would give each Pueblo leader a staff, a tradition that continues to this day. In 1695, there was a bad plague that nearly killed de Vargas. The next 3 years were full of drought and famine. During these hard times, de Vargas began reestablishing Spanish settlements in the areas such as Santa Cruz de Canada near modern Española, uprooting the Tewas and Tanos that were living there. With the hard times, talks of revolts again spread. This time it was supposed to take place on the full moon in mid-March 1696. With the exception of Tisuque, the Tewas, Tanos, and Tiwas of Taos and Picaris, and the Jemez would again rise in revolt. 26 Spaniards would be killed. This would spark a purge of potential rebel leaders, including Naranjo, a war captain thought to have helped spearhead this revolt. A bad winter in 1696 finally put an end to everything, with those who did not wish to live under the Spanish crown exiling themselves to other pueblos on the fringes, like among the Hopi, or to the plains tribes, such as the Navajo and the Apaches. This is when the Hopi-Tewa Pueblo of Tewa was established. Some of those exiles would return over the coming decades, however. The Hopi would never truly return to the Spanish fold. They would refuse missionaries and even burn down the Pueblo of Awatovi in 1700, when this Pueblo did accept a missionary. In 1697, de Vargas would be denied an extended appointment. He would tell anyone who would listen that he had been extended as governor. As a result, he would spend 3 years under house arrest. At least a portion of that, he was also kept in leg irons. In 1699, Bartolome de Ojeda and other disillusioned Puebloans would abandon their pueblos to establish Laguna Pueblo. In 1702, de Vargas's successor would abandon his office, and de Vargas would be reappointed. He would lead a campaign against the Apaches, but shortly after it began, he would be carried back to Bernalillo due to an illness. On April 8, 1704, he would die. This is perhaps due to dysentery. He was buried in the Church of Santa Fe, but due to remodels and a new church, his final resting place is unknown. During his time as governor, de Vargas had started to hand out smaller land grants to various families. Encomiendas would also come to an end under his rule. Here's where I'll draw the Pueblo Revolt to an end. Let's talk about the legacy of the revolt, and then let's talk about de Vargas' legacy. Due to Spanish abuses, the Pueblos were able to unite together and form a united front against the Spanish, successfully expelling them from the Kingdom of New Mexico for almost 13 full years. Often the revolt is portrayed as leading to a more equal coexistence between the two groups. To quote John Kessel, quote, "Between the carnage at Acoma in 1599 and the siege of Santa Fe in 1680 and its aftermath, 17th century Pueblos and Spaniards had worked out the basis of a dynamic coexistence, more by experience than by plan, more by peaceful exchange than by war. They had learned to live together, yet apart, and they continue to do so today," end quote. Former Governor Bill Richardson put it as, quote, "In the end, it was the revolt that made it possible for the Spanish and Indian communities, who share a long history, to reconcile and live together equally as vecinos and compadres," end quote. In reality, the Spanish often failed to meet these ideals. While coexistence was achieved, pain points and strife still arose, especially once the Americans arrived. While there would be no major revolts among the Pueblos again, and their religion and culture did not face any future existential threats, they were still marginalized within Spanish society. The revolt did ensure the end of the hated encomienda. In this way, it is reminiscent of another revolution half a continent away, and almost a century later, against fines and taxes that were perceived as unfair. In that way, to steal from the tagline of a book, one could call the Pueblo Revolt the first American Revolution, one fraught for many of the same ideals that modern United States of America sometimes unsuccessfully strives for: religious freedom, freedom from unfair taxes, and the freedom to live one's life as they choose. Things would get better by the mid-1700s when the population of the Pueblos and Spanish settlers reached some kind of parity, and this would ease some of the tensions, especially that the Spanish felt. The Pueblo Revolt also has the honor of being one of the most successful resistances to colonial forces in what would become the United States. In 2008, a statue of Pope would be entered into the National Statuary Hall, completing its collection and entering the single oldest member of the collection. It was not met without controversy, but I think Marcia Keegan made a salient point about the controversy. Quote, It was the Pope-inspired, Pope-led 1680 mass uprising that returned religious freedom to the pueblos of New Mexico and Arizona. Every time we see a Kiva, we remember that it was the Pueblo Revolt of 1680 that ensured its survival. Perhaps others will look at it this way too, and help a little. Statue of Pope in Washington would send a strong message to all those who divide instead of those who pick open religious and racial wounds of the past. We can kneel to the past and blow upon the dying coals of intolerance and be burned again by new flame, or we can rise above past events. Let's show all our children that all American children are indigenous now. End quote. With the legacy of the revolt out of the way, let's shift gears and talk about de Vargas's legacy. Don Diego de Vargas has gotten quite a lot of good press for his bloodless reconquest. A lot of it is justified, too. It does appear that to some degree he tried to avoid bloodshed. One can argue that later uprisings after his reconquest weren't part of the revolt. But it's hard to argue the same about his retaking of Santa Fe. Blood was shed, and it's important to remember that when we talk about this bloodless reconquest. Historically, de Vargas's conquest has been memorialized by the annual Fiesta de Santa Fe. He also gets the honor of being the man that granted the land grant that led to the founding of Bernalillo. Using these land grants as a way to get people to move out of Santa Fe and extend Spanish influence throughout the Kingdom of New Mexico. Overall, he seemed to have been a fairly effective governor of New Mexico. With that, I think we'll end things here. Just as a reminder, our next episode will be the Q&A and summary episode of this period, the period we have just covered. If you have any questions, you have about a week to get them in via the email or on the website's accompanying companion posts for any of the episodes so far.
If you enjoyed the show, please share it with your friends. Leave a review on your podcast app of choice if it lets you. Since I'm a Luddite and don't use social media, word of mouth and reviews are the only way the show spreads. We have a website located at engineeringfire.org. That's spelled ENGINEERINGFIRE.org, where I have a link in the header for podcast resources, including pictures, companion posts, my bibliography, and the transcripts of each show. We have an email you can submit comments and questions to at michael@engineeringfire.org. The intro music is Desperados by Frank Schroeder and sourced from filmmusic.io. The outro music is Neo-Western from Kevin McLeod of Incompetech. Links to all things mentioned are present in the show notes and at the website. Thank you all so much for listening, and I will see you in the next episode.